want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 399. That's right, one more to 400. Recording live on April 22nd, 2015. I'm your host, Andy Head Hard Hat Smith, with
Stevens at Infinitum.
And Task 427.
Montana CPR guy.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter. And Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com. Go find it. All right, gentlemen, how you doing?
Fantifical.
You're fantifical? That's awesome. I like that. I think this this show is going to be slightly, the country's tilting to the one side in this one. I'm just saying. Mr. Scott Burtz can't make it with us tonight. He is on assignment. Actually, it's sports related. I think he's trying to go into pitch for the Yankees. I'm not quite sure, but actually, it's his kids are doing sports. But that's how that's going. So he's actually going to be out for the next month or so. He's going to try to sneak in whenever he can. But in his absence, we've got some very special guests that are going to be hosting with us for the next few weeks. And this week is no different. We have the one, the only, you might have seen him earlier in the year, Mr. Don Weekly with us, a.k.a. Hey. Montana CPR guy. How you doing, Don?
Good, good. How's everybody out there?
Doing very good. And Don actually lives, and this is where the tilting of the country means, because Don and Corey live in Montana, not too far from each other. We've got Chad that's down in Texas, and I'm the only one holding up, though I am a rather robust person, holding up the East Coast side tonight. So we get a good talking here with how things are going. Is it still the frozen west out your way?
Nope, not at all.
Nope, the glacier has finally started to melt. The pass opened.
The rivers have come up. The rivers have gone back down. It's looking pretty nice. What do you think, Corey?
You know, if I didn't have granddad duty this past week for my six week old granddaughter, then you know, I would have been out caching like a madman. I would have called up you, Don, but. No, I was playing granddad, so.
That's hey, priorities, man. It's what that's all there is to it.
Family first.
That's it. Yeah, actually, this week was pretty wet. We've had a lot of pretty nasty thunderstorms coming through the past week or two. It's spring. What are you going to do? And but I did get out today and actually had one of those kind of cool situations where they always say you just wouldn't know unless you went looking with for a geocache. Went for a lunchtime cache literally 4 miles from where I work. Never really been in that area before and found this thing called Lassiter Falls. And what it is, it's a river that's going through that particular part of the territory, and the old, and I mean old, Lassiter Mill used to be there. And it's just a beautiful waterfall. It's gorgeous. I had no idea that it was right there in Raleigh like that. But again, you never would have known unless you actually went out geocaching. So, yeah, that was a cool. I wish I brought my lunch with me so I could spend more time to be there because it was gorgeous. It was really nice, and the geocache was decent as well. How about you, Corey?
Like I said, I was just hanging out. I mean, the weather was great. The weather was caching weather, and it really was. I even begged my wife, hey, you know what? Let me call Don because I know he hasn't been able to get out lately, and he's really been itching to because he's been about as busy as I have. And she said, you know what, we got to take care of our granddaughter, who, you know, just turned 6 weeks. I mean, that's a big step when it comes to babies. And that meant that we get to see her since mom had to start going back to work. And yeah, so we had ourselves completely busy. So,
isn't that what television's for? Isn't that Barney job to go and do something like that to take care of the kids?
Not when they're that size.
Oh,
no,
all right,
no, that is my favorite. That's my favorite time to just hold them. And I mean, yeah, it's.
You hang on for all it's worth, buddy. It's awesome.
I hang on to them and don't let them go till they're like 30.
They wiggle after that. I'm just saying. Mr. Taz, how about yourself?
Oh, had a interesting week of caching. Got a couple of puzzle caches. One of them actually required the reading of an NFC tag.
Really?
So yeah, that was pretty interesting. Popped up a screen that when I read the NFC tag had about 7 or 8 different options of programs to launch, and with the coordinates listed on there, which I did a quick swipe so that I screen captured it first. Then, of course, I did the stupid thing, which was hit the Google Maps, because it doesn't put a friggin' pin in the map on the Google Maps on there. And so I had to manually add the waypoint to CGO, but made it to ground zero, got a little bit of poison oak.
Lovely.
You know, I'm doing pretty good, so I'm relatively immune to it, but there's just a couple spots like at my wrists that get a little bit of irritation. And then on Friday, there was a person that set up an event here in Houston. It was a French gentleman, and he was only in town for 24 hours. And I saw his name. It's like, that name looks very familiar. And then I went back. It's like, didn't he do the ape cache down in Brazil? And so he had done the ape cache about 6 months before I had.
Oh,
done
wow.
It down there in Brazil. So, we sat there talking most of the event about the ape cache and the park down in Brazil. And then another event that was being held Saturday night, the host was stuck over in China. So I, me and another gentleman stepped up and became virtual co-hosts in there, which it was actually kind of a competition event as well, because the event was called My Flashlight is Brighter Than Your Flashlight. and we had some door prizes and also prizes for the brightest flashlight and the most dangerous flashlight, which we had a couple of Coilery stun gun flashlights.
Really?
I was not expecting that. Most colorful flashlight and the furthest drive. So we gave away some stuff that Beverly from GX Proxy had given to Greg Traveling Geek, who's the one that had originally who was originally supposed to be hosting the event. But thanks to Beverly from GX Proxy for donating those items that we gave away at the event.
That's awesome. Let me guess, dangerous flashlights in Texas. Who'd have thunk?
I mean, you need a stun gun for when you got the snakes, right?
You never know when a wild boar or, you know, strange geocacher walks by. I'm just saying. Yep. So, Don, any...
The Montanans just pass by that one every time they have it at the gun show. We just walk by and finish with the firearms because we know where the real power is.
There you go. Why stun when you can shoot? Oh, man. Montana, we love it.
Oh.
Mr.
Those
Don.
The same ones that shoot their desktops out in the alley behind their house, right?
Yes, that's true. Well, a lot of them don't even have the desktops. We just shoot at gophers right now.
There you go. Indoor sports, I love them. Don, how about yourself?
I haven't done any geocaching lately. I think I got one about a week ago, but this weekend was fabulous weather. I'm also one of the treasurers to the local archery club. And we had one of our fundraisers this weekend, an archery shoot, 3D shoot, 30 targets. We were there. I was cooking on the grill for everybody, and you know, we brought in $1,000 to the club, so was my Saturday and Sunday.
Awesome. Fantastic. All right, well, let's move on to, let's see, we've got the podcast roundup coming up, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week on GeoGearheads is episode 173, Kayaking 1. Mr. and Mrs. Landmonkey are live from Canada's West Coast to share some tips about geocaching with a kayak. That's 6:10 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. or 9:10 p.m. Eastern time this Thursday. And of course, you can always catch the show afterwards through the podcast feed or on YouTube. There is actually, we have a lot of lakes here in North Kakalaki, and kayaking geocaching is actually quite big here. There's a lot of them out here, Falls Lake and a lot of the other lakes around here. Great fun. Me personally in a kayak is, let's just say ballast is an issue. Just how it goes, but that's how that is. But on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast tomorrow on Thursday, wife Amy and I will be talking about geocaching with the family. We actually had a suggestion sent in from one of our viewer listeners, and they said, hey, could we go over that? Because they're starting out a family, and they want to have some tips and techniques and things to do. And the tip that I can get, and I remember this from DeBear with his little ones when they were there, extra diapers, I'm just saying. So that'll be... tomorrow on
the lots of wipes.
Yes, GeoSnippets Reboot podcast tomorrow on Thursday, 8:30 for the show, 8 o'clock for the pre-show. Don't miss it. All right, and finally, we've got please, this is starting to become a very good thing. We greatly appreciate our patrons. We now have a patron program for the geocaching podcast, and quite frankly, it gives you fine folks, if you get any value out of the stuff that comes out of these shows, please consider becoming a patron and helping to donate some funds to the show. That way it helps literally keep the lights on. It's rather expensive doing these podcasts, and the yearly bills add up, and we greatly, greatly appreciate any support that you give to us so that we can keep these shows a-going. Thank you so much, and all you have to do is go to geocachingpodcast.com, and on the right-hand side of the screen, there is the patron button. Just click on there, and you'll get all the details on how you can become a patron for the Geocaching Podcast. All right, Mr. Corey, we got some theme music coming, and then you are on, sir. Here we go.
Sweet. Well, in the news, if you haven't heard it yesterday, Groundspeak came out. Geocaching.com, sorry, instituted a one-year moratorium new challenge caches, or a one-year moratorium on new challenge caches yesterday. Sorry. No new challenge caches are permitted during this freeze, but any submitted for review by 1900 GMT are available. They're asking for specific feedback about what you like and don't like about the challenge caches only through May 12th of 2015. Make sure you head over through the link below to have your thoughts considered in the review process. You know, they would like to know what you like most about the challenge caches, what you don't like about the challenge caches, what you would like to see changed about the challenge caches. If you could describe your favorite challenge cache type, what would it be? And also what types of challenge caches you tend to avoid. So they're looking for a lot of feedback on what the benefit or what is not the benefit of these challenge caches. And I'm hoping to see that that they turn this into a real good thing. Hopefully it clears up a lot of red tape that we've been seeing lately in these challenge caches and get some of the annoying ones out of here before they tear it completely down like they did the virtuals. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to hear some feedback from you guys because we'd like to talk about this more.
Yeah, matter of fact, we're going to be talking about it next week. I wanted to keep it. Matter of fact, I know a lot of the other shows will be talking about this as well. The idea is very, very important, and I love that geocaching.com is doing this. they're actually saying, let's talk about it. Let's discuss it.
Before just shutting it down.
Before shutting it down and going through all this fun stuff and getting things figured out. So the idea is the link will be in our show notes. You'll be able to go over and voice your opinion with this. We will be talking about it in depth next week. I know if we started now, this is going to take over the entire show, and I don't want to do that. So we'll bring it up on episode 400 next week about challenge caches. But Corey's got a little bit more to talk about.
Yes, I sure do. And more so, I have an email that came in. It said, "Hi, Andy. Things are getting closer for Gia Woodstock. I have a favor to ask. When you give your shameless plug about people seeing you at Gia Woodstock, can you also let them know that registration closes Sunday at midnight?" So it's creeping up real soon, and that is Central Time. This will be the last chance to guarantee receipt of Gia Woodstock swag, as in, you know, the shirt, the coin, and the path tags. We will have some on sale at Gia Woodstock, but it's first come, first serve. And that came from Brian Cooley on the Gia Woodstock 2013 committee.
Yep. Absolutely. And, you know, this is it, guys. This is the last chance to get yourself registered in. I'll tell you this, and a lot of people don't know this. The packages that they have through registration do not include the path tags. I think the highest one does, the highest package you can get, but the other ones do not. So you need to order the path tags that are going to be at Gia Woodstock separately. So make sure you head over to the store, get those orders in so that goes. And if you haven't registered and registered for whatever package you want to do for Gia Woodstock, do it sooner rather than later, because Sunday, it's all over with. And we want to thank Brian for sending that information into us. We're more than happy to pass that along. All right, let's move on to the geocaching question of the day.
Question of the day. Hey cachers, this is Lookout Lisa from Cache Advance, and I'm your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, Cache Advance is your geocaching hub for all your caching needs, including the Cache Crate, a monthly subscription box of geocaching and outdoor gear. Well, Mondays through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ a question about geocaching. We recently asked, what day of the week do you usually find the most caches? Well, after tallying all the answers, we found that 25% or 25% of cachers cache most on Sundays. But the majority of us, or 64%, have the most finds on Saturdays. Interestingly, 10% find the most caches on Tuesdays. So here's what we heard. Dano shared on Google+, Sunday, as we usually go as a family attempting 10 caches. Wow. Well, Project Faye shared on Twitter, Sunday, but I find one a day for my COTD streak, Cash of the Day streak, of course, and they are on 473 today. Wow, they've been going for some time. We'll keep it going. Well, Nora on Facebook shared, Tuesdays. I'm sure it's because it's one of the days our store is closed, and I usually our goof-off day. Even if we're out doing stuff for business, we're able to load caches in areas that our business takes us. Well, that's awesome, Nora. You're able to mix it up while you're out and about. Well, Karen shared that it's Saturday. Like most of us, we cache a lot with friends, and that's their only day to play. Well, as always, we really enjoyed hearing about what day of the week you find the most caches, and you can too if you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Thanks all, and happy caching.
Well, thank you, Lisa. We really appreciate it from cache-advance.com. All right, let's get into the subject for today. Now, one of the things that we had learned from Don, a.k.a. Montana CPR Guy, many, many months ago when we started looking for a fourth host, was all the information that Don had about first aid. So, Don, why don't you give us a brief rundown about yourself as a geocacher and some of the stuff that that allows you to have all this knowledge when it comes to first aid so the people understand.
Geocaching, well, I've been doing it since, May 31st, 2010, Glacier Grizzly, a friend of mine, Corey knows him, got me into it, been doing everything, even kayak caching. Yes, I got a kayak, I call it the Cache Yak. So, you know, hey, I've done it almost all, but, you know. Anyhow, back to the CPR part. After 9/11, I was talking to a friend, and I got the urge to volunteer at a local fire department and did that for a few years and then took a hiatus, went to another district, moved to a new house, and joined another fire department, West Valley Fire and Rescue. While I was with them, they put me through training to become a CPR and first aid instructor through American Heart Association. Besides going through my FR first responder and EMT basic classes and the such, and the numerous too many calls, accidents, motorcycle crashes, heart attacks, attempted suicides, I mean, just the whole gamut of everything I've seen.
Right.
I've just got a load of experience. And then while I'm teaching all these classes for CPR and first aid, I decided to my fire hall, and I said, why not make a business out of it? Just a sideline, you know. So about 2008 or 2009, Montana's CPR guy gets invented. And Montana is where I live. It's what I love. It's I can't imagine being anywhere else. I'd love to visit Texas and a few other places, but I'd like to come back home, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And CPR is what I do, and I'm a guy, so there's Montana CPR guy. And then I got into geocaching, so I thought, that's a great handle, too. Why not, you know? that's about – oh, so anyhow, I was doing some training for the fire departments, and I decided to run my business, and I was teaching the people in Glacier Park. I teach doctors and nurses. I bring them up to current on their skills with BVMs, that's bag valve mask, the such, CPR first aid. Bag valve masks, AED, automated external defibrillators, otherwise known as the shock box,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Doing some wilderness first aid classes, pediatric first aid for all the people that run daycares, child cares. Anybody that works with children from about 17 years of age and younger should go through a pediatric first aid class. Stuff like that. So, you know, I've done CPR with the fire departments. And then I was actually over in Bozeman with one of my bosses and a very close friend of mine. And we were over in another city, eastern Montana, called Bozeman, Montana. And we were sitting there, and I was just, to be honest, I was hungover. because the night before is my vacation. I was kind of partying. And all of a sudden this lady goes, somebody help. And I look over, and she's like 12 feet from me, and her husband's like this.
Mm-hmm. That's never
out,
good.
Out, drool coming out. He's dead at the table, and I said, shoot, here I go. And I took off my coat and went over there. And you know, it happened so fast that I don't remember really doing much. But my friend said I saved the guy's life, or I helped save his life. It was cool. You know, so I've done it both as a professional and as a layman, a lay rescuer, just a John and Jane Doe, just wanting to help somebody that they don't even know, a stranger.
Yeah.
So. You know, I got a lot of experience doing, in general, a lot of it.
That's awesome. Yeah, and this is one of those unique episodes that I'm going to love to be able to tell in the future for people to come back and take a look at, because tonight we're going to be going over first aid kits, which I don't think I've seen too many other shows really go into in depth as far as. I mean, for me personally, I remember before I started taking first aid training myself, was you would open up some of these kits and you would notice the Band-Aids and some bug ointment, and that's about the extent of what you would want to touch inside a kit. You wouldn't have a clue what to do or why with all the other goodies inside. So that's what I think would be a really cool thing to go over tonight. And I'm going to let you go, and we'll just add some questions on here. So go for it.
Okay. Well, real quick, we'll try to make this as short but as sweet and exciting as we can. I mean, it's first aid. You know
how, oh, yeah.
how exciting can it get? One. Everybody needs to take a first aid class, okay? Come up to Montana, take a first aid class. I'll take you geocaching also, okay? Bonus. No, but, you know, take a first aid class in your area, whether it be Red Cross, the situation I'm with, the company is American Heart Association. You know, first and foremost, take a class. It covers the basics. Second off, what makes a good first aid kit? I got a bunch of them here. Here's one.
Okay, so Johnson & Johnson, for the people listening to the podcast and not listening to or watching the viewer. Yeah, Johnson & Johnson first aid kit. Now, I've seen these in Walmart. I've seen these in a lot of places.
Yep, yep. I just bought this one. I got this exact one in my Jeep Cherokee, and I just bought another one. This one's still wrapped. It's a Johnson & Johnson all-purpose first aid kit, $9.98.
Mm-hmm.
It's 125 items. The bulk of it's a lot of Band-Aids, but that's what gets used the most.
Geocachers know this.
Another one. Pardon me?
Geocachers definitely know this.
Exactly. another one I got was this one right next to the Johnson & Johnson. It's an Equate all-purpose first aid kit, 140 pieces, along with another 12-piece portable kit with it. So this right here was $8.
Yep.
Okay. Real quick, I got this one a week ago, or actually about a month ago on Pi Day. Corey, you remember this?
I do.
That is my signature item. That is actually a signature item for me. This is what I give out when I go to put things into geocaches. This is exactly what you have in your hand.
Yep. And he had a Pi Day event, and this was one of the things that, well, I won it. Me and three or four other people got one of these. But it's a what this kit run, Corey? $5, $6?
No, $2. That is a famous dollar store item.
Yes, sir. I clear them out.
A whopping dollar.
I clean them out every time I go. They know I'm coming. They actually order extras because they know that I use those.
Now he knows how cheap I am.
Yeah, I've got some of those out of the dollar store as well. The Band-Aids are moderately acceptable, but it's still better than nothing. I got this one here. Actually came in last month's cash crate from Cash Advance. I actually used it while in Brazil.
What's the name on that one, Chad?
It's a Lifeline.
Awesome.
Nice.
Lifeline. I use a lot of the Lifeline.
And I got this one. This is the one that I normally carry in my vehicle, which is it's another Lifeline with a hard shell case, 85 items. I think I spent like $12 on Amazon for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think a lot of those larger ones are great for the vehicle. I'm actually probably going to stop by Walmart and get a larger one than this because I feel this one's just a little bit too small. I mean, it does hold a lot of stuff in here. But, I kind of want a few more items. And you can always add items to it.
You know what I like the most about it?
More items in there than what I've got.
The one thing, because I have the exact same thing in my trunk, the thing I like about the Lifeline one that you just showed up with is the carabiner. I have had that hooked onto packs. I've had that hooked on the side of my car. It just keeps it right where you know it is, so you're not fumbling around trying to look for it.
And that's what I used to do with it before I got this smaller one here is I would clip it onto my bag when I knew I was going to be out in the woods, deep woods and stuff. But this one pretty much has everything that this one has in it, just a slightly smaller quantity. Yeah.
So Dan, you were showing a couple other ones there as well.
Yeah, well, he says it's a Lifeline. This one here is a Lifeline, mm-hmm. and it was $15 soft pack. It has its Velcros open, and there's a boltload of stuff inside it. I added a whistle,
I love the whistle for
doing CPR. It was $15. We have a local sporting goods store that's called Replay Sports. They sell reconditioned equipment. You can take it in, trade it in, sell it, and they also sell new stuff. Yeah. He carries Lifeline. Here's my backpack and first aid kit. It's Lifeline. Again, I like it because it came with a lot of stuff in it. It was packed. It was like, I think, $15. But it's a BPA hard water bottle. So I have a water bottle I take that filters water out. If somebody's with me and forgot a bottle of water, I can filter water into this, and there they go. They get a bottle, and it has a really good complete first aid kit. I've added tweezers. I've added some tongue depressors in case you jam your finger and you need to splint it. Just a bunch of stuff, but these are great. It hangs from my backpack just like that from a D-ring or something,
yep.
And it's there forever, you know?
You know, there's a saying that you have, and I want this overemphasized, if you would, as far as a good first aid kit that you had put in there.
What makes a first aid kit? All these kits are great first aid kits. None of them ain't worth a tinker's darn if you don't use it. If you don't have it, you don't have it with you, if you don't pack it, it don't matter. It's a $4,000 kit or it's this dollar, Corey, you tightwad. Great kit. Thank you. No, but seriously, though, even this, I mean, you know, yeah, the Band-Aids are okay at best. 30 sheer adhesive Band-Aids, 4 clear, 4 fabric adhesive Band-Aids, 3 non-pads, and a durable plastic case. It's 42 pieces. It's 41 Band-Aids is what it is. But it's better than nothing, and it fits and everything, and it's a buck.
Yeah.
And I can add a lot more to it from home. Always add some pills. Take some migraine pills, some Tylenol, put them in a Ziploc baggie and throw them in a pack. There's room for stuff in there. I can hear it. There's space in there, you know.
You know those Equate, that Equate kit that you were showing, most of the stuff, the reason the term Equate came up to me is because that is the brand name, I think, for Walmart, where a lot of their medicines, a lot of their aspirins and pain relievers and all that are all Equate. So you know they've got them in there.
Well, yeah, they you can get them there. As far as like this kit here, the Equate one, I'm looking at it right now, and I got to move my glasses up, of course. Fabric antibacterial bandages, 40 of those, 5/8 ones, 3/4 one, 35 of those, 25 1-inchers. You know, so again, but here you go, paper tape, sterile pads, which is important for an open wound. Non-stick pads, 2-inch by 3-inch, 3 of those. Instant cold pack, antibiotic ointment, that's important. Hand cleansing wipes to disinfect your hands if you're working with somebody. Butterfly closures, you know, and that's about it. There's some tweezers and a couple other things. A first aid guide is in here.
Yeah.
But I have not seen a first aid kit lately that comes with a good supply of medications.
No,
because it's such a personal thing. That you just need to put some of your own stuff in there and just replace it every spring, whether you used it or not.
Yeah.
Throw away the old, put in a couple new pieces.
Yeah, because I remember Bear coming out with some outdoor first aid kits where they actually did have all the different things in there. But, yeah, it's like I said, you just check the product in the back and see what the individual items are to make sure with that. So when you're actually going into some of these kits, and then I'm going to be interested in you had mentioned the first aid manual with that. Why don't we touch on that first?
Okay, real quick. Yes, I agree with you. Okay, sorry. This one from Johnson & Johnson does come. It's brand new. It has 4 Motrin IV ibuprofen caplets. It has 1 Bengay, okay, and 2 nitrate patient examination gloves, pair of tweezers, Johnson & Johnson first aid guide packed in durable plastic shell, and a boatload of bandages, and yada, yada, yada. So this one does come with a little bit of... Bengay and Motrin.
All right.
That's nice.
Awesome. But like you said, you can always get stuff and put them into them.
Exactly. Yes. You can always add. Now, back to the first aid classes, okay? Take a first aid class from anybody. Look it up. Google it. And for your area, Google's great. But, you know, you still need a book. You need what I call a Bible. And for everything you do, especially if you're going out in the woods and you're going to be miles away from anybody helping you other than your phone, okay? This book here, for those that can't see it, it's called the Wilderness First Aid Survival Guide. When you can't, just call 911. It's a Falcon Guide, $6.95, $7.50 Canadian for all our friends up north. This is a really great book. Here's one more. This one I got from one of the bookstores before they closed down because now everything's online. First Aid Manual, a comprehensive guide to treating victims of all ages and in any emergency. This one's a little bit more expensive. This one was $15, but it is completely packed with just about everything under the sun for $15. If you're going to be in charge of an event, and you're going to have somebody that's going to be in charge of having giving medical aid, this is something that's great to have. It just, you know, it covers everything, and you need to have a book to know what you're going on with, what you're doing. There, one more time, I'm going to touch on the phones, the apps. I downloaded 3 free apps. 2 of them look to be pretty excellent. put them on your phone. Put an app on when you're having your lunch at lunch break. Go through the app for a few minutes once a week. I mean, just you'll learn something new, and you'll learn something that you can use to help somebody. The question, if popular, is whether doing CPR or first aid. Well, what if I get sued? Can I get sued? No, you can't. Well, yeah, you can if you can find somebody to go after you. Anybody can be sued for anything. But it's called the Good Samaritan Clause. If you act within the ability, if you act within your training and don't go outside of that scope, so in other words, Corey and I are out geocaching. He falls down and scrapes his knee and can't put the Band-Aid in a certain area, and I help him. I wash out the wound. You always got to wash him out with water. Take the water out of your backpack, rinse off the body, rinse off that area, wash it clean, pad it dry, and then put a Band-Aid on there, okay? As long as I work within the scope of my training, I'm fine. Now, if he something was to happen to him and I need to do a trach on him, I need to punch a hole in his throat so he can breathe, that's above my training, and I'm probably going to end up in trouble, mm-hmm. you know? So just act accordingly and act within your scope of your training and be wanting to help. That's why your CPR and your first aid classes, the KISS method is so popular nowadays. Keep it simple. If you keep it simple, people want to help and want to help out and help your fellow man.
Okay. So why don't we go over some of the stuff for people for first aid in general that you're going to find in a first aid kit. For example, if you have a scrape or a cut on your finger, for example, when would I want to use a Band-Aid? When would I want to use a butterfly? When would I want to use a gauze roll? I mean, are there certain things that work better than others?
Yes, no, in my opinion, and I'm sure Chad's got some input on this, because aren't you in the medical field, or were in the medical field, buddy?
No, I'm not. My wife is, though.
Okay, there you go.
He's there by proxy.
It all depends on the size of the wound. You know, your every typical day cut, rinse it off and apply pressure. And then put a Band-Aid over it, and it's going to seal it up probably pretty good and good enough. If it keeps on bleeding, well, then you got a bigger wound, and you're going to look to using gauze. Gauze typically comes in a lot of these kits. It's a 2-inch by 2-inch sterile gauze. It's you may not be able to see it right there. That's a gauze right here.
Mm-hmm.
2-inch by 2-inch gauze. They are sterile. In other words, they are clean of all dirt, bacteria, everything. You open it up, it's crystal clean. It's allowed to be next to your skin, even get into the open wound. I mean, you don't want to push it in there, don't get me wrong, but that's what the sterile part's all about. It's not carrying bacteria that's going to make you sick or give you an infection.
Right.
But anyhow, back to the gauze. If it keeps on bleeding, then you've hit a bleeder. Use gauze, prep, put it on the wound. Let's say I got a cut here. So I put the gauze here and hold pressure and hold it tight, okay? It's going to be I call it uncomfortably tight. You want to really squeeze, okay? Not cut off blood circulation, but you want to put some pressure on there. Give it a couple minutes. If it continues to bleed, add some more gauze and yet some more pressure, okay? That's what we teach in our first aid class. And we teach all the American Heart Association instructors teach about the same profile. Apply more pressure. After a few more minutes, if it lets up, then that's great. That means you applied pressure and it started to clot. Do not rip off the gauze. Anytime that you put anything on, cloth, Band-Aid, a napkin, whatever, and it starts to stop the bleeding, well, don't think, well, I'm going to rip this off and then put a Band-Aid on, because you just ripped it back open again.
Exactly.
Now mm-hmm. comes the blood again.
Yeah.
So put gauze on there. It stops bleeding. Then you take your bandage wrap and you wrap it, and you wrap it around back and forth, and then you tuck it underneath the wrap, and there you go. You got it to where it's going to hold the gauze there. And you can continue geocaching if it's not a bad injury, or if it's a bad one, if you need to get going. Party's over, we can cache later, get to the hospital and get it stitched up.
Yep.
You know.
What kind of situations would you have? Because you see the different type of Band-Aids that come in through a kit like that. Is there much of a reason why you would want to use, say, for example, a butterfly as opposed to a standard Band-Aid? Is there purposes behind those?
Definitely.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead. No, Chad. Touch on the what you think the butterflies.
I would say when you got a lot of deep laceration where you want to get the folds of the skin pressed together, put the butterfly across there, and it when it stretches across there, it pulls the two pieces of skin together and holds it together.
So it's kind of like a stitch.
Yes, yeah. an external stitch. And that's exactly right. Chad got it right. That's what I feel. When you got a long cut, a 2-3 inch cut, or even more, you know, then you're going to use multiple of those, and you're going to go every half inch to an inch and put another one, and you want to squeeze that skin back. You want to close that back up, pinch it closed. That will hold everything together, close it up nicely. Of course, this is after you've irrigated it out with water, fresh water, clean the wound.
Hit on that a little bit, too, because...
And then I would put some sterile dressing on there and then wrap it with a bandage, and that's going to be a pretty good... You know, you possibly go back to cashing. I mean, you know, we got importances, right?
when you're having situations like this where you've got a certain set, and keep in mind, most of the stuff that we're talking about here, we're talking simple cuts, scrapes, abrasions, things like that. If it starts to get more than that, folks, go to the hospital. I mean, it's that simple. But the simple stuff that you're going to use a basic first aid kit, this is your stuff where you're out geocaching, you cut, you scrape, you tumble. Okay, yes, I do that a lot. And you're going to scrape up your knees. You're going to scrape up those elbows. You're going to rip up your palms of your hand. What is the best way for technique for cleaning all this stuff out? When you've got a cut, you've got an abrasion, is it simple as just washing it with water and until you can get someplace where you can get some soap and water? Or what's the best way to do it?
For the most part, in my mind, yeah, first and foremost, clean water. It doesn't matter if it's out of a water bottle that you filled at home and you've been taking little hits off it. There's some clean water in there for the most part. That's what you want to use. An unopened water bottle would be best. That way anybody could use it. But whatever. The first point is wash out the fungus. Chad Taz there was talking about down there in Brazil and one of your cohorts, what do? He used a rock and had some fungus on it or something, you got a cut, and what'd you do? First thing you did is wash out the wound, correct?
Exactly. Wash out the wound, and then I even took some alcohol pads and rubbed it, because there was an abrasion on there where he scraped the skin right off of there. It was a Brazilian gentleman that was with us there by the waterfalls, and rinsed it, made sure all the debris and stuff was definitely out of there, and as much fungus as we can, and then alcohol, because alcohol kills
bacteria.
So, yep. And then Band-Aid it. He wanted to just slap the Band-Aid on and go, and it's like, no, let's do this right. You know, you don't want that thing getting infected.
That's in a jungle, and there's lots of bacteria. There's lots of bacteria everywhere, but a jungle, a damp area like that, bacteria survives and thrives.
We got swamps in North Carolina, and I'm just saying. you got to watch that. With a lot of that, is some of the other things, you know, you hear about Bactine, you have these sprays, you have these creams that you can put on there. Are those good, at least for initial stuff, till you get out of the woods and can actually clean it right?
Yeah. I mean, anything that comes in a first aid kit is, of course, good for you. Neosporin is great. Four Neosporin packets, ointment packets, come in the Johnson & Johnson one. So that's great for the rash, the road rash. If you slid down a steep trail and you got a nice road rash area, you could use one of those Neosporin packets. First, rinse off the area. Then take a Neosporin, open it up, and rub that whole area down. Then I take some of those 2x2 pads, place them there, wrap it all up together with a bandage around it, and I'm back to cashing. I don't know about you, but that's what I'm doing.
Well, I think a lot of that, too, is once you actually do get it cleaned up, you don't want to get it dirty again. So wrapping it up with gauze or what have you is definitely a way of preventing to get anything else in there.
Correct.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when you're out with things like that, now, one of the things with the you had mentioned before, you put in tongue depressors, and, of course, that gives me that instant in sensation in the back of my mouth, and I don't want to touch that anymore. But the using of it for a sprain, something with a finger, what would you do with that?
Yeah. What you're doing, and I'm trying to find mine right here. And in this case, in my life,
I love the water bottle with that. That first aid kit with the water bottle, that's genius.
Yeah, I love it because, you know, you take everything out, you dump it all in your backpack or whatever, and then you got a water bottle for your cohort that forgot their water or for whatever reason you need a backup water bottle. This is BPA-free. It's hard as a rock, and this thing is going to last forever.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, sticks, okay? The big thing, and here's where you use the tape that comes in these kits, is you either break the stick in half or use two of them, and you support the finger that you sprained, however you want to do it.
Yep.
Support the finger you sprained, and you got your outside fingers too. So I'm going to say my middle finger, I sprained it for some reason. And so then I'm going to wrap it with tape. Just mildly, just to keep everything snug, keep it there, and keep the sticks help keep it from getting bumped and getting it twisted is what it is. It just keeps it in line. All you're doing is putting the finger in a position of comfort, and you're lashing it down to where it's not going to get twisted or bent and until you can get to a hospital. In my mind, it's preventative. I mean, it's just to make it tolerable to get you to a hospital in leisurely time.
Absolutely. And that's the question that I had with that as well. Is there anything that for something like that, obviously, you're not going to tell sometimes between a gentle break and a strain in a case like this. Is there anything where you get these diehard geocachers? I don't know where they come from. And they want to continue on geocaching. And what should they look for something like that where it's like, hey, dude, I really think you need to go now and go to the hospital? Is there something that would tell you that as a sign besides, oh, my gosh, my finger's going to fall off?
Chad, other than common sense and you know, everybody's an adult and they're responsible for their own actions.
Yeah.
If there's a child there that I'm responsible for and I feel that by the grimace in their face – ask them if on a scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 5 how you rate your pain. 1 being, I barely notice it. 5 being, my arm is coming off.
Yeah.
And they tell you 4, 4.5.
You're
well,
over.
Party's over. We're out. You know, there's always tomorrow. There's always tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
And then as far as, you know, looking at your hand, you know, your finger's swollen. You know, it's got 10, 15% swelling. And you're a 2. Maybe 2.5 on the 5 scale there, you're probably good to go with splinting it and wrapping it and moving on.
If it looks like a summer sausage?
As long as you're comfortable with it. But then, if it's looking like a summer sausage or, you know, turning purple on you, go to the hospital. It's not worth losing a finger because you did something major down inside of there and didn't realize it.
Exactly. I'm a doctor. I'm not a doctor is what I was going to say. And you know what? If your finger is turning odd colors and it doesn't hurt that bad, but it's turning all kinds of shades of blue and purple, guess
Something's
what?
Wrong.
If you don't go somewhere, you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
And you may end up losing your hand or your arm.
Yeah.
Is that worth the caches that you're going to get? No.
Yeah.
There's always tomorrow.
Exactly. So what other goodies can you find in a geocache that would happen with common things?
Say it again. I didn't quite understand your...
Yeah, no, as far as with... We talked a lot with Band-Aids and things like that. Is there anything else that you're going to find or that you think that should be in your first aid kit that that you might run across as a geocacher?
Yeah. One thing I'd add to all these first aid kits I got here, none of them come with waterless hand sanitizer.
Really?
A 99-cent bottle of... What was that? Perel? The waterless hand sanitizer, you know what I'm talking about?
I got a little spray pump version of those, and I refill them. The Purell alcohol gel based, and I got a little spray pump that you can spray into your hand. But then I also have water purification tablets.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
So, yeah, because that gets much more in the survival side.
In case you're out there a long hike, longer than what you expected, you're low on water, you need to refill with the creek that's nearby. You don't want to die from the bacteria that's in there.
Yep.
Yeah. How about Chad actually got some this week, and he was talking about poison oak, poison ivy, poison oak type things. I didn't hear those too much in the list. Is that something that you want to make sure that you have in your kit?
I think honestly, no. I would add something to my kit if I'm in the woods or in an area that has that kind of thing. We don't really have anything like that around here or anywhere up that I'm aware of in the northern area.
Right.
So I don't worry about poison ivy and poison oak and all that stuff. Now, if I was in an area that had lots of that, then I would probably go buy a cloth or something and probably some type of cream or whatever medication is easy to carry that because that can be probably pretty annoying pretty quick.
Well, I'm thinking if you're an hour out into the trail and you realize you just started bubbling up from poison ivy, obviously the first thing you want to do is wash the oils off and get that as clean as possible. But just for the irritation effect alone, I would want to have something with me.
I would... For people who are very allergic to it, I would suggest a poison ivy, poison oak scrub. It's a little bit big for a kit, but it's something that you can generally carry along with you in small bottles. Toss it in your pack. I am almost immune to poison ivy. There's only a certain areas, very sensitive areas, like right around my eyes. And then poison oak, I'm a little sensitive right at the base of the wrists. And other than that, you know, I can roll in a field of poison ivy. But there's other people like my wife, she looks at poison ivy from 20 feet away. She breaks out.
Yeah.
That's a little exaggerating, nice. So it depends upon your level of sensitivity to it, but you know, as far I was kind of thinking, what you might have in your pack, first aid pack kit that if you're not normally carrying poison ivy scrub that you can use is like what you were saying. Try to clean it off. I would try to use the water to get it off. Clean cloth. Don't spread it around. Then alcohol pads. And then, if you're wanting to scratch, go ahead and wrap it up.
Yeah.
Because if you're scratching when you have the oils on there, you're going to spread it around.
Yeah. And I think if you have that much of a specialized situation where you are extremely allergic to anything from poison ivy to bee stings to whatever, you bloody well better have that type of preventative things as far as EpiPens and whatever with you as you're going into the wild because, yeah, that's something you don't want to get caught without.
No. People that have to have EpiPen medication for prescriptions, that's their lifeline. We had a gal up here. All the time. They should have them with them all the time. We had a lady that was up at our local golf course a couple years ago, and her EpiPen was in her car, and she was out on the sixth hole or whatever, and she got stung by a bee, and she passed on because the EpiPen was just too darn far away.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, you got to be prepared for a lot of that. Okay, any final things as far as absolute essentials that you should have in any first aid kit?
My two cents, a lot of Band-Aids, a lot of wraps. Just find something that has a first even go get one of these $8 or $10 first aid kits and go through it and grab all the stuff that you're comfortable using. And put it to use. Put it in a bag and put it in one of the many pouches in your backpack or whatever your pack is for geocaching. And then the stuff that you don't use, play with it. Learn how to use it. Go get a first aid class. They're only $30, $40, $45 to take a first aid class.
Mm-hmm.
And you will learn a lot how to take care of yourself with just that class alone. And you'll learn a lot about what to use in that kit, how to properly use it.
And if there's something that's missing in your first aid kit but you want, that you think would be beneficial, get it and put it in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that could be anything.
Because regionally, it's all going to be different. I mean, because some places have ticks. I never encountered ticks till I was up here.
Yeah.
I never knew what a tick was.
Yeah.
In the desert.
And then you learn about tick keys and things like that. Yeah. Because a lot of people in the chat room were talking about that too. Simple tweezers, tick keys, anything that you're going to realize that the area that you're going into, and do some research. If you're going someplace and you are it's not familiar to territory for you, check those out and find out what you're going to need into your first aid kit so that when you do go into a new area of exploration, you're prepared for whatever these type things.
There you go. Cool little,
Yep, and Don has a very cool tick key with that, and Cash Advance sells those too, and I believe so does GX Proxy. Those are awesome. I mean, those are very quick ways of getting ticks out effectively without getting all creeped out.
Well, yeah, they are, and the biggest thing about tick removal, I'll touch on that real fast, because we can have around here what's called Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing is, and you don't know what tick carries or what tick don't, so let me give you this little first aid tip. Okay, do not squeeze the body with tweezers. Do not pinch them too hard because you will make them short of vomiting, and whatever's in their body now went into your body where they bit you. Okay, so what you do is you grab them. If you don't have a tick removal tool, you grab them by the body with tweezers, but gingerly, just barely, and you pick them up to where the skin will actually
lift up.
Tent.
Yes.
And then just hold them there just for about 2-3 seconds, and they should release and pop free, and then the skin will come down and everything's fine. Now take that tick and put it, and I was told this from a doctor friend actually, take it and put it in a Ziploc baggie, throw it in the freezer. Why? Well, I'll get that in a second. And don't forget to wash and wash the area, okay? But so now what you want to do is throw that tick in the bag for about a month, 2 months at most. So a month goes by, 2 months goes by, and you're like going through there for a pound of burger, and like, what's – oh, yeah, that's a tick that got me 2 months ago. Throw it away.
Yeah.
Why did I save that? If I get sick in a week from I don't know what, I've never had, or I got this weird fever that I can't break – well, I bet you I got it from that tick. I got that tick in the freezer. I could take the tick and me to the doctor and say, this bit me. I've had these symptoms. This, and they can do tests on it and find out what you got, and it's nice to have the little SOB right there.
Absolutely, because certain ticks have certain diseases that they'll have. And
Lyme disease.
Yep, Lyme disease, the whole shot. So, yeah, absolutely, and that's excellent advice. I love that. That's great. All right, good stuff. Anything else, guys? And I think we're just about done here. Excellent stuff. All right, Don, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. We love having you here. Excellent stuff, and we're gonna love having you back because we're just touching the tip of the iceberg when it comes to first aid. So good.
Oh, yes.
Thanks. Awesome. All right, folks, thank you so much for watching the show. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you for supporting our show and becoming a patron. And if not, please consider it and click on the patron link on geocachingpodcast.com, and we will appreciate each and all that. And also tell others about the Geocaching Podcast so that they can also get all the geocaching greatness that we give to you fine folks each and every week. Important dates coming up. This weekend, April 24th to the 27th, is CETO weekend. Make sure you go out and get a CETO event so you can get into one of the souvenirs that they will be giving out for that. And again, make sure that you have May 2nd and 3rd on your calendar for celebrating the 15 years of geocaching. All right, folks, time to move on. Again, thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Thank you, cache-advance.com, for everything that you do. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. The show is copyright 2015 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.